In December 1992, Steve Jobs sat in his office contemplating the unthinkable, quitting. 7 years after leaving Apple in disgrace, he'd burned through millions trying to prove himself with Next, and it was failing spectacularly. His fortune was evaporating. Pixar was hemorrhaging cash. The man who'd once revolutionized personal computing now faced a humiliating question. What if he'd been a one-hit wonder? By February 1993, Next shut its factory and laid off most employees. When a reporter asked about failure, Jobs couldn't even answer. He just walked away. Yet within 3 years, something remarkable happened. Toy Story transformed his Pixar stake into billions overnight. A year later, he returned to Apple as interim CEO, propelling its value from $2 billion to $20 billion. This wasn't just a comeback, it was resurrection. Jobs' journey reveals something profound about failure, reinvention, and the strange alchemy that transforms defeat into triumph. How does someone fall so far and climb back even higher? At 30, freshly ousted from Apple, Jobs cycled through midlife crisis fantasies, asking NASA about space travel, visiting Moscow to meet Gorbachev, considering a Senate run. Despite owning $100 million in stock, he felt adrift without purpose. When he founded Next, the contrast with Apple's garage origins was stark. A mansion launch with immediate media attention, assembling loyal refugees who believed in his vision despite having no concrete plan. Jobs' fame opened doors but complicated everything. A Citicorp officer dismissed him as a prankster, forcing him to call Bank of America's president directly. When interviewing law and accounting firms, he devised a cruel test, insulting their client lists to see who would stand up to him rather than agree sycophantically. His wealth transformation was jarring. When I was 23, I had a net worth of $1 million. At 24, it was over $10 million. And at 25, it was over $100 million. Yet he lived in a cheap shared house, deeply ambivalent about spending. While Next's product remained undefined, Jobs obsessed over creating the perfect company. He paid $100,000 for a logo, a black cube tilted 28 degrees, and gutted their office, installing circular staircases and Ansel Adams photographs. He hired overqualified people, interviewing 100 candidates for each position. This perfectionism would become both his superpower and his Achilles heel. Jobs' aesthetic obsession emerged early but unevenly. After buying a plain house, he hired an inexperienced contractor to remodel it, yet slept on a mattress because he couldn't commit to buying a bed. Their relationship devolved into arguments as Jobs demanded extraordinary craftsmanship, even for hidden elements like telephone wiring panels, insisting, "I want the very best I can get." This obsessiveness fueled both success and potential self-destruction. Since Reed College, he exhibited extreme behaviors around food, fruitarian diets, long fasting, subsistence on minimal calories. Even at the all-one-farm commune, he would gorge himself, then induce vomiting, shocking those who considered food sacred. Jobs operated with a management duality that perplexed observers. He could be good Steve, seductive, inspiring, charming when wooing talent, but transform into bad Steve, berating and humiliating the same people when pushing for perfection. Susan Barnes called this the seduce and abandon technique, where people became desperate to regain his withheld approval. His inner circle functioned like an archetypal family, bound by unspoken love but thriving on confrontation. Designer Susan Kerr would confidently tell him, "Steve, you're full of shit," in front of everyone, though she sometimes cried in the bathroom afterward. He demanded total commitment, often scheduling weekend meetings, seemingly oblivious that employees had families. While Jobs obsessed over Next, he neglected his hobby company that would prove far more valuable, Pixar. Born from George Lucas's divorce-driven asset sale, Jobs purchased Lucasfilm's computer graphics division for $10 million in February 1986. Visiting the team triggered the same holy shit moment he'd experienced at Xerox PARC, another chance to commercialize brilliant research others couldn't. Computer animation faced staggering challenges. Creating realistic images required simulating light rays bouncing off countless polygons. A feature film would cost over $1 billion, 50 times a typical budget. But Moore's Law promised computing costs would halve every 18 to 24 months, making their dream eventually feasible. Unlike his next micromanagement, Jobs let Pixar be completely run by Ed and Alvy Ray, because these guys were adults already. John Lasseter created animated films showcasing their technology. His Luxo Jr., featuring animated desk lamps, became the sensation of the 1986 SIGGRAPH convention. Unlike technical demonstrations, it had actual characters and emotional impact, earning an Oscar nomination. Yet the Pixar image computer flopped. By early 1988, only 120 units sold. With 120 employees burning $10 million annually, Jobs repeatedly threatened to shut Lasseter's animation group. But Lasseter persisted, winning grudging approval for Tin Toy. The film won the 1989 Oscar for Best Animated Short Film, Pixar's crowning achievement, and Jobs' only good news that year. Jobs orchestrated a Hollywood-style spectacle for the October 1988 Next debut at San Francisco's Davies Symphony Hall. Despite extraordinary press coverage, hardly anyone bought the $6,500 Next Cube, absurdly expensive for students needing $1,500 computers. Their factory, designed for 10,000 monthly machines, produced just 400. As a private company, Next maintained success's illusion. In 1989, Inc. named Jobs Entrepreneur of the Decade. Canon invested $100 million, and talented professionals took demotions to work near the legend. Next expanded into an elegant Bayfront campus with $10,000 leather sofas and an IM Pay staircase while selling almost no computers. Jobs missed historic opportunities. IBM CEO offered $60 million to license Next software. Compaq and Dell made similar offers, all demanding Next abandon hardware. Jobs refused. Executives burned out under his volatile leadership. If you depended on Steve's praise, you would be crushed when he flamed you with public humiliation, which was inevitable, recalled Paul Weiss. On May 25, 1993, a brutal Wall Street Journal front-page article declared Next's workstation destined to become a high-tech museum relic. Just as Next collapsed, Disney shut down Toy Story after Woody emerged as an unlikable bully. Jobs had reached absolute bottom. The Pixar crisis resolved when Lasseter's team added scenes showing Woody as a caring leader. Production resumed in April 1994. At Disney's January 1995 press conference, seeing Pixar's characters alongside Disney icons, Jobs had his revelation. Pixar, not Next, would be his salvation. Jobs immediately became president and CEO with an audacious plan: take Pixar public right after Toy Story's release. The problem? Pixar had never been profitable, with $47 million in accumulated losses. But Netscape's successful IPO, despite being unprofitable, created a new paradigm. Toy Story opened to critical acclaim, with a $29 million first weekend. On November 29th, within 30 minutes of trading, Pixar's stock soared to $49, making Jobs worth nearly $1.5 billion. The IPO netted $123 million, transforming Pixar from $47 million in debt to $76 million in cash. Meanwhile, Apple was dying, stock falling from 60 to 17, sales dropping from $11 billion to $7 billion. When a Next manager contacted Apple's CTO, CEO Gil Amelio bought Next for $430 million, wanting both the software and Jobs. Jobs quickly manipulated media to discredit Amelio. After Apple announced a $708 million quarterly loss, the board ousted him. Jobs seized control. At the August 1997 Macworld convention, Jobs dramatically revealed Microsoft's $150 million investment in Apple, with Gil Gates appearing on stage. Despite fan outrage, Wall Street celebrated. Apple stock surged 33%. Jobs became interim CEO, carrying around a curved white foam noddle of the future iMac. The iMac became Jobs' crowning achievement. He abandoned his network computer concept, but kept the sleek all-in-one design despite market research showing consumers wouldn't buy it. Acting on instinct, Jobs unveiled the iMac on May 6, 1998. The translucent blue case generated media frenzy with 150,000 pre-orders and 278,000 units sold by July's end. By October 1998, Apple's stock had tripled. Success masked deeply problematic behavior. Jobs humiliated a journalist during a friendly Wired interview, berating him with, "I have no time for this philosophical bullshit." He routinely reduced people to tears, once telling a junior PR executive, "Nothing you say means anything to me," then ironically awarded them the account. Jobs embodies Silicon Valley's contradictions, greed and ambivalence about wealth, elitism yearning for mass appeal, control freak supporting others' creativity. He inspires both love and hate, often from the same people. His story captures the human capacity to rise, fall, and rise again, carrying all our contradictions.